SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three. At the races at Churchill Downs. Midweek here at Churchill and Derby week, of course, next week. Meanwhile, it is Belmont opening week in New York, and Belmont Park opens on Friday, the winter season at Aqueduct, and the brief, unfortunately, turf season at Aqueduct. And I think only one day where any races came off the turf. Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
We didn't lose a single turf race at Aqueduct.
Really? Excellent. I thought there was one day maybe that had come off. Very cool. Hope the same.
Incredibly cool.
Hope the same can be said about Belmont season.
I don't think it'll happen. I don't think that'll happen. I don't think that would be good. It never rained enough to come off the turf. You know, an off-the-turf day here and there isn't such a bad thing.
No.
How are you, Steve?
I'm good.
How's Kentucky?
It's been damp and, you know, suffering. They've had the same miserable, extended, wintry, you know, I was with Ben Huffman yesterday, who, of course, does the racing office work both here and at Keeneland, and he was laughing. It's snow on bluegrass day is what he said.
Ask Ben what it was like when they didn't take races off the turf at Keeneland, ever.
Right.
And why they take them off now when it rains. I don't understand. I really don't. I don't understand. When I was there in 94 and 95, they never came off the rain. And I was there on some horrendous days. Look up Lexington Day in 1995. And suddenly when they put synthetic in, and they started taking them off and putting them on synthetic, which I guess I understand, but then when they put the real dirt in, they still started taking races off the turf. What happened to their turf course that they took off, didn't take them off back then, and they do now? I don't think they put in a different course, do you?
No, sand-based.
I'm not
sand
curious
based.
About that. I mean, I'm curious.
I'll ask him.
Understand what, I mean, I remember in the fall of 95, the last week, they took races off because the weather had been so bad, it was cold, that the course literally just deteriorated so badly. It was like almost as bad as it was for the Breeders' Cup when half the horses didn't handle it. Glad to hear they'll have another Breeders' Cup soon. But that was the only time I had seen it prior to when they started taking them off for synthetic, and then they continued it. But I assume when they took the synthetic out, they would go back to their practice of never coming off the turf. And that was one of the great things about Keeneland. You never had to worry about races coming off the turf. I mean, Lure made his five-year-old debut in a race, whatever it was, the time. It might have been the Elkhorn at a shorter distance, but I'm not sure. And he beat Buckar, and it poured all day, and he won the race in the bog. So even good horses ran on it.
Yeah, and you're right. It was almost as if they got into the habit with the Polytrack,
yeah.
and they forgot that we only have a 16-day season.
right, and it was one of the great things, you know. Anyway. I just always wondered what changed that they started taking them off when they never did in the past. Whatever.
Quick question.
So as long as they're controlling those people on the hill.
That's
imagine we had
right.
a police action at Saratoga like they had on the hill, by the way, this weekend. I think it would have got more publicity.
That's true.
They didn't arrest Haggerty, did they? He was okay, right?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything from him all week. Maybe they did.
I haven't talked to Mikey to Matt either, so who knows? You know, I'll check in with him.
I
bail him out.
That's pretty
anyway.
Funny. I love it.
I'm just getting started here.
I can imagine. You were up at Saratoga a couple of days, and yesterday, Andy, I circulated for everybody the first day of sale. They had the single day sale tickets for the new area at the end of the grandstand, which the artist renderings, it looks unbelievable.
You know, I meant to go over there and I just totally forgot. imagine how disappointed Pierre Goulet is going to hear when he hears out of town and go, this is going to destroy. Probably won't even get out of bed when he hears that. Yeah, I meant to go look, and I just got busy with Mom and forgot.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
So, yeah, as am I. So much so that I completely forgot. And I think I might only be up there one more time before I go to we go up to race. But, yeah, it sounds great. And, I mean, the response has been terrific for the new box areas. And I guess it's a good thing because, you know, all kidding aside, they were underused areas. And I think it's one of the things it's a woman playing a game next to me, by the way, in the train. There's a lot of beeping going on. Those were underutilized sections of the track. And, you know, at any time, you know, something I never really noticed until I started going out and occasionally watching races on the infield, where you would see the whole grandstand. And sometimes you'd go watch them start like a mile and a 16th race, you know, down towards the top of the stretch. And you realize that those sections are just basically never used. And you don't have a lot of dead space in Saratoga. And this is an opportunity, and I think a great idea to take advantage of that. And the reception has been great for them, so obviously it wasn't a bad idea.
No, and, you know, there is going to be the predictable nonsense about, you know, about the changes. And I can tell you that end of the building, absolutely as dead as can be, and this makes the most of an opportunity for people to, you know, if you're going to do something like this, do it in an area that, you know, that is underutilized.
Yeah.
And the carousel. Look at what's happened, you know, in the old carousel downstairs, and how nice that area has become, and how much more, you know, how much more enjoyable you know, the space is. I mean, you just can't sit on your hands. I mean, we go back to the Paul Roberts, you know, the design and all the innovation, you know, the next century project that Paul Roberts, you know, who was responsible for the remodel at Ascot, you know, that they've put into this. And you can't just keep, even at Fenway and Wrigley Field, they've done ongoing modernizations.
Oh, Fenway is nothing if not a modern ballpark.
Well, as much as it can be.
Right. I understand. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not, you know, listen, but the other thing, you know, those places, you know, you have these places, whether it's a Fenway or a Wrigley or Saratoga, these are places where the community has ownership and they feel ownership. And that's a good thing. But that's, you know, the idea that people feel invested in it. They've been going to Saratoga for many years, just like they've been going to these ballparks. I think ballparks are a reasonably good analogy. It's a burden, but it's a good thing. You want people to feel invested. You want them to love the place. And obviously there's going to be some questions, some complaints when you make changes. And that's not unreasonable. None of us, you know, a lot of us don't like change. And you worry it's going to be much different. But I think in general, people have seen a lot of change we've made because it's for the positive, or they haven't been a major negative at the very least. And I don't know how this can be perceived as a negative because nobody was really using the space anyway. So I think, you know, it seems like they've done a good thing. And like anything, you make some changes and you find out the things you did right, the things you did wrong, and you try to tweak the things to make them better. And they feel like positive changes. So I'm looking forward to it. It's not, listen, it's not an area I go down to very often. I just don't have the time or the inclination, but, you know, certainly I want to check it out and see what it's like. And I'm sure I'll head up there before we start racing, because I'll be up there a week before the meet starts anyway.
Yeah. Invite people to, I'll retweet that, the link I sent out yesterday, and there's the artist rendering, and there's like a little video that they made that gives everybody an overview, and it's the people in the other boxes on the other end in the clubhouse are going to be envious, believe me, in terms of comfort level.
Well, you don't have to wear a jacket, you know. Yeah,
that's
no, it's good.
True too.
Are you getting excited for Ascot? I mean, my Twitter feed is just covered with Ascot stuff.
Well, I'm not. No, but it is.
Get the feeling the English are getting even one horse at a time.
as they lure one after another. Well, we've got Mendelsohn. We've stolen Mendelsohn from them. Maybe this is a a response.
They haven't sold him yet. He might steal from us. Be careful.
I know. You're right.
He's sort of an interesting horse because he feels like the first one of these horses that has to be taken seriously. Even if you're somebody like me who would never bet him in here, I'm not going to be surprised when at the eighth ball, Mendelson's up by three lengths. I go, oh, blew that one again, you know? I mean, there is a palpable chance that he is the most talented horse in the race. Bill Justify is also pretty talented as well. There's other good horses in there, too, but not that the most talented horse has a big history of winning the Derby. I know recent years it seems to have happened a few times, but I think it's a bit of an aberration. The Derby's sort of a famous race for the most talented horse not winning, right? But Mendelson feels like he's the real deal. I mean, he's a horse that's has experience. He's been in a lot of different situations. He's traveled successfully, and he's got a gigantic dirt pedigree. So, and obviously, his race in Dubai was a bit dressed up by circumstance, and circumstances extremely unlikely to occur at Churchill Downs. So you don't know how he's going to react to a completely different situation on a dirt track with kickback, et cetera, something he's never really had to deal with that didn't come from behind in Dubai. But I don't think there's any denying that this is a really good horse. And also, you know, for Aidan O'Brien, as great a trainer as he is, he doesn't have a great record of success outside the Breeders' Cup in the U.S., and he certainly doesn't have a record of success in dirt. I know some of his horses have done well in the Breeders' Cup before. I was getting his bird, Giant Claws, and Declaration of War. But in general, you know, winning a race like the Derby, and as great a trainer as a Bob Baffert or a Chad Brown or a Todd Fletcher, I don't think that they would presume that they could decide, you know, go to the Arc for the first time and be successful in a race like that. So I think it's...
Yeah, we lost you there for a second at the end. No, maybe we still did. Case, did we lose Andy? Maybe. All right, Casey will get him back. And I'll mention as well a horse that, you know, you're going to hear on the Mendelson front, you know, a lot of people, you know, saying this is, you know, the first of his kind. There was the horse going back to 2000, and it would have been 2005, I think. Blues and Royals, that was by Honor and Glory, and he won the UAE Derby, and was out of a Dixieland band mare, and he was the one that I thought was going to come to the U.S. and really have a legitimate chance, and he got sick, and he ended up dying of colic. And Blues and Royals was his name, and that was the first time I said, "Here's a UAE, you know, a Maidan horse that could win, or not Maidan. That would have been Night El Shima." But I think Andy's back. Andy, I was just talking Blues and Royals. Who, in fact, he came to Belmont. He was with the Godolphin Barn, and he was the first of those UAE winners that I thought could come over and compete. Nope, Case. Nope, I guess not. No, we lost him. All right, yeah, he's on the train, and it's hard. And sometimes there's certain spots, you know, when you're taking the train from, for those of you who know the service from Saratoga, or if you go to the service from Saratoga is not all that easy, frankly. You're better off making the train ride into Rensselaer to the Albany station across the river, across from Albany, and that's a pretty regular regular service that you can get back and forth from the city if you are inclined, if you're not a driver and don't want to. If you want to get to Saratoga that way. But there are some dead spots. Tina takes the train down to each year for Belmont on Friday. She'll, you know, come down. And I used to take it all the time. Casey says he's having trouble with the signal. I used to take the train a lot. When I was working out of New York, I would take the train to Chicago.
And I'm back.
Oh, there you go. All right, good.
You didn't call me back. I'm sitting here waiting, so I called you back.
Well, no, he said it wouldn't ring. He could tell that it was like a dead signal.
He'll probably leave me again.
I mentioned, Ann, that Blues and Royals was a horse that I thought was going to come over to the U.S. and compete, and he ended up getting sick and dying. But Mendelssohn, you know, we had the preview in the juvenile turf.
Well, I don't think his juvenile turf is going to win the Derby. I mean, a perfect trip up the rail in a mile turf race, I don't think is comparable to running in the Kentucky Derby. So
no.
I'm not sure I'd use that. We have a horse who can travel. I think that, you know, the question with him, beyond all the other things, I'm surprised that nobody's talking about a horse coming from Dubai and being successful 5 weeks after running in Dubai, and whether he went directly from Dubai to America or Dubai to Ireland and back here, he's still making a gigantic journey in 5 weeks. It's something that hasn't really been tried or done successfully in the past. I'm not saying it won't happen, but there's a great deal of accessory questions about this horse beyond his talents. I don't think his talent's in question. He's good. You know, how good he is, well, that's something that always is yet to be determined over time. But it feels to me like all the other questions may make him a poor bet, especially at the 5 or 6 to 1 range, right?
Yes. And in fact, Marty was on just before you, and he was talking about the odds and what an interesting element.
Marty Feldman,
yes. Marty. Marty McGee. And the fact that you're going to have Justified maybe as low as 3 to 1, and what that does for everything else. And, of course, you would point it out immediately with Gronkowski when it looked like he was going to participate, you know, that he was going to be a takeout neutralizer. And, unfortunately, we've lost them.
Yeah, everybody stole that from me. I know. I'm very depressed. I should have patented that.
Take out neutralizer.
Then I feel like I'm a bad person because I was joking about him coming out. How idiotic are they? Sanctimonious, lower, you know, pandering to the lowest common denominator.
It is a weird, the whole Gronkowski experience, and maybe it'll be reborn for a Belmont run. It was very strange. Even if you tried to take like a neutral ground and just say, all right, you know, this will mean some more
neutral. I don't
attention.
Care one way or the other. I just think it's amusing.
Yeah.
I mean, can't we just laugh sometimes, right? It's tough enough. It's a tough enough game. You can't take an opportunity to have some fun and joke about things. I mean, it's just, you know, it's silly. But, yeah, listen, to be honest, it's not, you know, 95% of the people and probably 99% of the civil people without agendas, they understand, you know, it's having some fun. I mean, you know, and he's an amusing guy. Listen, Gronkowski's an amusing guy as a football player, right? He certainly doesn't seem to be a guy who has trouble making fun of himself, right?
No,
he's have a good time and have some fun. So, yeah, but I don't think that, you know, the notion that Gronkowski was the horse named Gronkowski was somehow going to bring him the game. It's akin to the notion that American Pharoah was going to save horse racing or any horse that won the Triple Crown or Zenyatta. It's not like these weren't good horses and they got people interested, but they're not curing, you know, whatever ill the game may have, some real and many perceived. If you really do want to sort of grow a fan base, something, you have to hope you're educating people. In some ways we are. It's not as though we aren't educating people, but, you know, do as much as possible and find ways to do it. Take advantage of situations, you know. But I don't have any notion that it's not a bad thing to have a Gronkowski running, but I don't know how good it is, right? And I don't think it's a good thing for people to see the horse that probably is hopelessly overmatched and might go off at 15 to 1 and really should be 75 to 1 or something, then run 17th. And, you know, it's kind of like when Orb won the Derby, right? And all they did was say, oh, you know, he's so great, he's going to be the next Triple Crown winner, instead of explaining to people that actually the race was a complete meltdown and it's the speed horses you kind of want, and right? And what's his name? Normie Invasion moved too soon. And, you know, what happened? Well, the best speed horse to run the Derby won the Preakness, and the best speed horse that ran the Belmont won the Belmont, right? So that was the greatest meltdown in actuality and in result possible. And you mislead people when you say, oh, Orb is this great, great, great horse, and he's going to the Triple Crown. No, he's a really good horse under good circumstances. It may or may not appear in his next subsequent races, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, let's explain to things to people why they happen. To me, that's the most important thing to do in racing. Demystify it. Explain why did Orb run as well as he did. Why did he run not as well in his subsequent races? It's not as though he ran badly in any of the races, but in one of them, the circumstances were particularly beneficial to him, and the others, they weren't. And they were more beneficial to a Palace Malice, who was also a really good horse, as it turned out. And maybe Oxbow would have been too if he hadn't gotten hurt. But I think that we tend to just sort of become result-oriented. And being result-oriented never helped anybody.
Well, and you've beat that drum for a long time.
Yeah. This is not genius. None of this stuff is genius. It's not really that complicated. None of it's that complicated, Steve, in and of itself. A lot of it's just common sense. And I think that common sense is all too often forgotten in racing, right? I don't think any of this stuff is that complicated. People can understand it. It needs someone to be explained to them. And once they see it once, they'll recognize it again, and they'll see a pattern in the future. And isn't a lot of what racing about, recognizing patterns from the past going forward? I mean, isn't that true of a lot of predictive things, right? I mean, certainly what people do in games, and obviously that's all mathematics, but it's patterns, things repeating themselves, right?
Any exposure, once you get an interest taken, then the education process and
racing is the greatest game in the world. It's the great, the horse racing is my entire life, and I love it, and it never bores me. I always find it interesting. There's so much going on in racing, and all of it is because the game is great. It's so many different levels. There's so many different parts of it, whether it's people with horses and a love of horses and been working with the horses, or it's figuring it out if you're somebody that has that sort of interest in the game and watching and, wanting to be right and being wrong most of the time, but being right sometimes, and the opportunities to put together bets and use your betting acumen more so than your handicapping acumen. All these different, there's a million different things in racing. It's the most interesting thing in the world. The idea is you have to find something that might have an interest in it and then help demystify it for them. And then suddenly all the doors start opening, right?
It takes longer for some people. And there's obviously so many frustrations and roadblocks and challenges in terms of understanding what this is.
Make it more great when it works out, right?
Right.
You suffer through all the frustrations, and then you click and you make a score, whether it's a pick 4, pick 5, or pick 6, and you've been frustrated, and you hit that thing, and it's like, oh, and it's just, what is more exhilarating than that? And we have to accept that racing is like buttermilk, right? Not that many people like it, right? I think Jerry Garcia said about Grateful Dead, right? They're like buttermilk. there's a lot of people just aren't going to be interested in racing for whatever reasons. There's a lot of people that aren't interested in a lot of things for whatever reasons, but people that are really interested in it. And, we have to reach that audience, because that audience is out there to a certain extent. And we hopefully are, and obviously places like Saratoga or Cleveland or Del Mar or Oak Lawn manage to reach a much wider audience. And the question is, can you find a way to turn out get those people to really become great fans of the game? In a lot of cases, we have. I have a lot of friends in Saratoga, people I know up there that have become great fans of the game, people I grew up with stuff, through exposure to it. Nobody ever said it was easy, but nobody ever said it was worth doing this, right?
Yeah, agreed. What we talk about here so often, and whenever it comes up, it always makes me, it reminds me that we should do even more of it, is the distinction between understanding the handicapping process and the translation to the wagering. And there what is maddening about the sport for people that are learning and are on the development curve as players is that they may very well understand what they're seeing, but it doesn't guarantee the next layer that's necessary for success, which is translating your understanding into successful wagers.
They're not great handicappers, but they actually have great betting.
Exactly.
Betting acumen, and can turn a poker piece in a much better way than a good handicapper can, because they understand how to put them together.
Exactly.
It's funny,
Andy, you're in a bad spot here.
You're just kind of getting
that electronic cutting. It's kind of cutting every other word off. Try again.
But every other word is only other word is smart. So you
really you're better
maybe
now.
Maybe even one out of four. So if you could just get the smart words out, I think I think of Andy Beyer, and Andy's a good handicapper, but he's a better better. One thing
right.
I've seen Andy do is make great scores over the years by how he bets. And Nick Tamaro is a rare case of somebody who has extremely good opinion, but also an exceptional ability to put bets together. I mean, Nick's a rare bird in that sense. And that's one of the reasons that he's as successful as he is. He's really... Nick is somebody who is relatively unburdened by personal, things where he's able to see things very clearly. He's able to put bets together very clearly, and I think Nick's exceptional in that respect. But it's hard, absolutely. But that's also another fascinating element of the game, right? It's another layer of the game. Learning to handicap, learning to bet, all these things. It's great. Listen, I just think it's the greatest thing in the world. And, you hope to impart that on people at some point, at some level. And I think sometimes we do. But you're not always going to be successful. Everybody's not always going to be interested, but some people are. And maybe you get through to those people. I'm happy to, increase racing fans one person at a time. I don't think there's any reason, to be, you start getting these grandiose ideas, you're just going to get disappointed, right?
Yeah.
You're never going to change the world here. We're just not going to do that. I think we have to be willing to accept that we've got to take baby steps. And we also have to stop being negative about everything with this. I mean, let's have an honest discussion about the handle. I understand the handle declines, from 2004. But let's have a discussion which includes an enormous amount of those handle gains from 1995 to 2004 were rebate-driven handle that stopped existing for a variety of reasons, many of which were how much different the rebate environment became at that time. But a lot of that handle, a great deal of it, was rebate-driven handle that dried up. How come that never gets discussed when we keep talking about handle? I'm not saying it's the whole answer, but it's certainly part of it, and a big part of it.
No, no doubt. And all of this is, this is all, it's complex. And there's, there's knee-jerk reactions to things.
The game is dying.
Yeah, idiotic.
The game is not dying. It's just, we're so enamored with negativity. And there's a difference between joking and being negative. I think the game's the greatest game in the world, and I'll continue to believe that until the day I die.
Well, Andy, we are looking forward to opening a day at Belmont on Friday.
I think at Ascot.
No,
really
at Belmont. At America's Ascot.
Royal wedding. What's that?
At America's Ascot, Belmont.
Right.
Belmont's been called.
America's Ascot, Belmont.
Yep.
It's going to be great. Can't wait to be back. Shivering on the third floor. It'd be Belmont without a week or two of shivering on the third floor.
Exactly. What do you mean? It might be Belmont Steaks you'd be shivering.
No, it's usually warm by June.
Hopefully. I got one question, though. We got one question that's come in to Casey for you. And he just wondering your thoughts on Johnny and Vino Rosso versus the other Pletcher horses.
I don't really have an opinion. I haven't really looked at the Derby that much. The opinions I have are sort of that I don't like Magnum Moon. I won't use Mendelsohn, but he could beat me. Other than that, I mean, I wouldn't spent a lot of money on Vizo Rosso winning the race, but he did run okay in the wood. He's just, you know, he's a hard horse to have an opinion on, right? Because he's got one okay race, three mediocre races, and then the Goodwood Memorial. Who is Vino Rosso? You know, with the real Vino Rosso. I have to pronounce it correctly, or Larry will cock me a chat by me this week. Vino Rosso. I don't know who he is. And to me, Steve, that's one of the problems with trying to handicap the Derby these days. We don't know who these horses are. We used to know, because we used to see enough efforts to get an idea of who they were and why they won races and why they lost them. And I don't want to hear this nonsense that, you know, Rosso didn't like Tampa, because he ran one very good race at Tampa. So that nonsense doesn't hold water. Why did he run so well in the wood? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't. He doesn't seem like a horse I could back, but I wouldn't tell somebody not to bet him at 20-1.
Well, that's where a lot of these are shaking out. I mean,
they're going to have to be.
Well, enticed. For those that are interested in Vino Rosso,
why can't he win it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I agree. He feels like a horse that could be on my tickets. Enticed. I mean, I'm a little biased. I loved It's Tricky, so I'm always kind of rooting for Enticed to do well. I mean, I think the Derby has just become very, very hard from that perspective. But I think one thing that rates to happen is the favorites don't rate to run 1-2 and all these, you know, or win the Derby. I know we've had this run. People say, oh, it's the points, it's this and that. I think the pace figures, to be honest, in this race. And I think, you know, because, I mean, a horse like Justified, the likelihood that he gets this sort of clean and easy trip is somewhat slim. And we don't know if he's going to be able to overcome that. So that's a real question with a Justify, right? You know, what happens when somebody bumps him out of the gate, puts him a little bit off his game? We've seen a lot of horses lose the Derby at the start, right?
Sure.
You know, and I don't really have, I feel fairly confident Justify is the most talented horse in this Derby. And he's got the right trainer, that's for sure. But he's not the kind of horse I would ever back at 3-1 or 7-2. In a big field, because it feels like he's got a lot of intangibles going against him.
I feel the same way about Mendelsohn, for the same reason, that there's
absolutely,
the same bugaboos.
Right, and while, you know, it's one thing to, you know, they all face the possibility of bad trips and different things, but it's one thing when you're taking 20-1. Listen, I've been on Practical Joke last year in the Derby. I was a good pick. He was 30-1. He ran fifth. He also happened to have gotten one of the great rides in the history of the Derby from Joel Rosario. But, you know, to me, that was like a moral victory. Because I'm not going to win any of these Derbies lately, because I'm not likely to be backing short-priced horses at 20-horse fields. But my Derby opinion has been pretty mediocre lately, and I'm not surprised it is. It's not like I had this argument with Anthony Stabile the other day, who couldn't understand why I bet, you know, $60 or $80 in the Derby most years. I have no opinion. I don't rate to win. Why would I bet a lot of money? Much better opinion. I think I have a much better opinion. Bent races at Belton.
It's funny. I brought that up earlier this morning with Pete Fornatel. We were talking about the approach to the Derby, and I said Andy, I said there's people that, you know, that this is their biggest single race bet of the year.
Yeah, that's
and
fine.
Exactly. And then there's you, and you said, you know, you might bet more on a race at Aqueduct midweek.
And I will. I bet Pop of Beauty last year. I liked him. I'm going to go.
I appreciate it. And we'll be looking forward to some final. You'll do a Derby video, right?
I will do a Derby video. I will be taping it, I think, next Thursday, a week from tomorrow.
Excellent.
Are you excited?
I am. I am. You bet.
All right.
Andy Serling.
Have fun in Kentucky.
I always do. Love being here. Andy Serling, everybody. Follow Andy on Twitter. And Belmont opens Friday, and we're in the fourth race. Bell gets to run back, and stretches get some distance on her, a mile and a 16th on the grass. And, of course, if it comes off, we'll run anyway. But she came out of that sprint. We had to run. We're waiting for a race for over a month. So
comes back here in 3 weeks, and kind of excited about Friday. Take a timeout, and probably our last of the morning. We'll get to Seth Merrow, one more New York conversation, and get Seth's thoughts on what's been moving forward toward Derby Oaks, see what his thinking is. Seth Merrow, close us out. We also, Gary Pomisano Jr. is going to join. I guess we'll save it. Now we'll save it for tomorrow, obviously, because it's getting too late. But going to talk to Gary. They've had such a great success with the Churchill Downs Racing Club. The Warriors Club has been successful beyond wildest expectations. And they announced another group that Amos is going to train. So you want to have some fun, you can latch on to a new Churchill Downs Racing Club horse. Visit the Amos Barn. A lot of fun. We'll talk to Gary about it tomorrow. Let's take a break here. Seth closes us out on this Wednesday at the races.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Is this the end of the Apollo curse? Undefeated Justify or Magnum Moon could become the first since 1882 to win the Derby without racing as a two-year-old. Of course, 18 others will enter the Louisville starting gate. What are their odds of extending the spell? Begin your search for enlightenment with ExpressBet's Kentucky Derby Wager Guide. It's available free online at ExpressBet.com beginning Friday, April 27th. Horse Player Now's Bob Neumeier. XBTV.com's Jeff Siegel and Millie Ball. Daily Racing Forum's Dick Girardi. Santa Anita's John White. And At the Races radio host Steve Bick analyze the race according to main contenders, value plays, and $100 wagering strategies. Plus, get intriguing stats, trends, and daily updates you won't find anywhere else. NBC Eddie Olchek joins experts in a revised guide version May 3rd. Go to ExpressBet.com and get the guide to open a new account and to choose your bonus of up to $500 in time to wager on the Derby.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. We've extended our special introductory price through to May 1st, so log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. And just about 15 minutes or so, close out this Wednesday here. And Seth Merrow joining us when we talk next Wednesday. We'll have a Derby field assembled. Seth, good morning.
Good morning. You know, people can start handicapping because we have the points and we kind of have an idea. Have a link over on Equidalia. There's some free PPs for the contenders, so you can jump in. I'll ask you, I had somebody, a reader, an Equidalia reader, write to me and say, are there any kind of probables for the undercard stakes? I don't think that's come out yet. I pointed
today.
Them towards, the link to the nominations on the Churchill website. I mean, you can pull up nominations and nomination PPs, but I hadn't seen or heard of any probable kind of list yet. Okay.
Yeah. In fact, yesterday just so happened we took Darren Rogers. Ben Huffman and I took Darren for the first time to the Cottage. He had never been on Eastern Parkway, and we got Darren out of the office for a good hour. He said, I can't. And then Ben said, well, we have to go over the probables, right? So why don't we do that at lunch? So that got Darren out of the office.
There you go. You're serving a purpose. Now, although I saw you're serving a purpose in the morning, too. I saw the Twitter picture of you and your brand new stopwatch down there. Oh, and I actually sat in the studio where we taped something for Oaks Day that they're going to play on the screens down at the Teletheater in Albany, the race book. We taped something with Roddy Valente last Saturday, and he said he got a text from you, in fact, with some good words on the Coach Rocks workout. I mean, he was thrilled with the Saturday workout for Coach Rocks over the Churchill Strip.
She's go, go, go. And the nice thing is, even though she's a horse that is super eager in the morning, I mean, there's no shortage of those, she's not a horse in the afternoon that is a runoff or needs the lead by any means. I mean, she'll be quite happy to sit. I mean, she has shown some tractability. So she's a horse that by Friday next week is going to be kind of a mojo filly.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it because I said to Roddy, in any sport, you like to root for the hometown team. And in horse racing, for those of us up here in the Saratoga, Albany area, Roddy's the hometown team. He's easy to root for. It'll be a lot of fun. He's super excited. I think you may see him bouncing around. I think he was planning to come down sometime this week.
I think he's coming tomorrow.
Yeah, so he's going to be there for, you know, the better part of a week and a half or so. Just got it, because I guess Dale said, don't get down here. You'll love it. You'll have a great time. And so Roddy, you know, to have a horse heading, you have to think top three or four going into the Kentucky Oaks. I mean, he's over the moon.
The more everybody talks about the race, the more open it feels. The Hennig filly, my Miss Lily, as well, certainly. I think there's people that are going to be taken. We're not going to get a chance to see the UAE Oaks winner, Raya. We're not going to see her until next week. But you know, Baffert's got her now. The workout people may have seen against Abel Tasman was impressive. Wonder Gadot, as I said earlier this morning, the free drop Billy of the Oaks, because she's a horse that has not won since last year, and you feel like, you know, where is the, you know, that effort, and it's going to come at some point, and if it comes in the Oaks, you're going to get a nice number. And there's plenty of people that are going to go back to Eskimo Kisses from the Fairgrounds Oaks and the Ashland efforts. So this is going to be a fun, not just a fun Oaks. The Oaks Derby double bet becomes intriguing as well.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking just that. It's going to be an Oaks that's going to offer a lot of fun and then goes into the Derby. So if you combine those up and have a couple of opinions, that'll be a nice payoff, you would have to think. And you know, you were talking with Andy. I'm surprised Andy doesn't jump into the Derby. I get his thinking, and I'm sure a lot of people are like that. It's better to put your money into a race you have a strong opinion on. I just think that the Derby is such an aberration. Even if, and I agree with them, it's different than it has been in years past. in that it's more of a puzzle now. But it's just there's so much money put into it, and if you wind up to have the right opinion, boy, it just pays off so well. So to me, the Derby is one of the three races. Maybe you toss in three race days. You toss in the two Breeders' Cup days, maybe one or two other days, but the one where you have to take the rubber band off the bankroll and take a couple of shots, because if you hit, there's just so much money in those pools that the value is just phenomenal as compared to a regular day of racing.
I'll ask you the question of the morning. Your typical expense on Derby, and we should also find from you how many horses of your future wager bets look like they're going to be running, and then your typical approach. And then next week, of course, we'll get your final selections.
In anticipation of that, I sat down. Actually, now we know what the points board is, and so I kind of looked, and I jumped into pool two and pool three with all others, and I put a handful of individual horses in as well. I bet seven individual horses. Five of them are in the starting gate. Some of those overlap on the all others pool two and pool three. But regardless of how it shakes out, because I'm just looking down at the bubble horses, I can go four deep, and this will still hold true. I'm going to have 14 of the 20 in the starting gate with the all others, and a couple of individual bets as well. So now, admittedly, so the six who are left out, there are some notable names: Good Magic, Audible, Boltioro, Mendelssohn, Solomini, and Free Drop Billy. I don't have. But that means I have horses like Magna Moon, Noble Indy, Vino Rosso, Enticed, Justify was in an all-other in pool two. So I'm feeling pretty good. And that, talking about the strategy, is going to allow me to play around a little bit. I'm now backed up with all of those horses to the point where, if one of those wins, I'll at least hit a kind of a break-even point so I can kind of jump in and take a shot with some of the others, maybe. And I like, like I say, there's so much value to play some of the picks and have a pick three or pick four wind up in the Derby. If I get to the Derby and the picks are already no longer alive, certainly even if they are, as an exacta player, I will take some shots at it with the exactas. Because, again, 20-horse field or even a couple of scratches, you get down to 18 or 19. There's just so much value, and so much value. I mean, folks should take a look at these actors from the past few years. You know, even if a favorite comes in, there's just so much value there to take a shot with it. I like Audible. I'm at this point, I'm still sticking there. Obviously, I have to wait for the draw and wait for the last words and hear what guys like you now with your stopwatch, but also Mike Welch and others have to say, but still kind of liking Audible. I've liked Combatant all year long. And I have him in future pools, so I don't have to jump in and play a win bet there. But if I'm playing exactas, I will certainly have him in the mix, because I'm not sure I'm as married to him as I was earlier in the year. I thought Combatant would be a live long shot, and after the Arkansas Derby, I'm shying away a little. But I think if you're playing exactas, certainly tries or supers, I think you have to have him in the mix, and I think you'll be some decent value. So, like I said, I'll play some picks and certainly have some exacta plays on Derby Day as well.
How much, when it's all added up, will you have bankrolled into Derby, into the weekend? Do you
probably
figure?
Well, if you throw in picks and whatnot, maybe $300, something like that.
All right. We also sat the. We'll get the final, final thoughts from you next week. And just had Andy and I yesterday noted that Naira was offering out the single day sales for the new section at the end of the grandstand. Have you seen the design and what's gone on there at the end of the grandstand?
Yeah, I've obviously looked at the artist rendering, and I know a couple of guys who work over there, and they're working on it, and they say it's going to be gorgeous. But boy, the artist rendering is just, and really a nice idea. Now, you are at the top of the stretch, but you're at the top of the stretch, and, well, it just looks like a great setting, comfortable, and clearly plenty of TVs, so you're not going to be, you know, worried about seeing the end of the race or anything, and you're going to have a nice view of the track and post-parade and whatnot. I think it's going to be a big hit. And I, you know, oftentimes after we do our TV show from the backstretch in the morning, I'll sit over there and work into, you know, mid-card or whatever before I come over to the front side. So a lot of times I'm sitting on our set on the backstretch, and I can look across to the grandstand. And, you know, most days, weekends certainly not so much, but most days, Wednesday, Thursday, certainly those last couple of sections were never full.
Nope.
So to take out the seats and to kind of put this down there just uses that space in a way that it, I think, is going to be beneficial to a lot of people. I think it's going to be really well received. You know, the pricing is going to be the maybe the contention, but certainly I think it's going to be a really nice new option for people.
Yeah, agreed. Andy, as well, we talked about it. You also made me think, speaking of the use of space, Dave Groening, for those that may have noticed last night, Dave was at the presentation of the community council meeting that is involved with the Belmont Park renovation project, and there's been some movement in terms of the layout and what's now going to happen. The space across the street under the tunnel that goes underneath Hempstead, that is where the retail complex now is going to be, and the taking up less of the backyard there. The hotel that had seemingly was going to be almost toward the owner's parking lot and that first lot that's adjacent to the driveway coming in off Hempstead into Belmont. It looks like the hotel is going to shift sort of behind where the main gate, you know, that center gate stands now. And Dave Groening sent out a visual of the changes. They seem like they make sense, and I'm just going to be looking forward, frankly. I think it's a remarkable circumstance bringing the Islanders, you know, to Belmont. It should make for an amazing change, the whole atmosphere.
Yeah, I've said it before in regards to Gulfstream. I mean, Frank Stronach is a guy who has tried a lot of things over the years. Some have worked, some have not, but I've always given him a tip of the cap for, you know, being willing to try something new, and had that concept down at Gulfstream. I was, admittedly, never at the old Gulfstream. Wish I was. It sounds like a great place. But Gulfstream, as it's configured now with the retail right there, I've said it before. A couple of years ago, I walked out of the Florida Derby, and as I was walking out, I thought, oh, I need to do something on my computer. So I sat down on a bench with the computer just outside the racing facility, but right next to the parking area, and kind of tapped on my computer. This was 2 hours after the Florida Derby was over. It was dark. Well, cars are still pulling in. People are getting out. They're going to the entertainment venues and the food, the restaurants and whatnot there. And I just think, boy, it's a nice buzz, not 24, but maybe 18 hours a day around the facility and introducing people to the place. So maybe they say, oh, you know, we're not racetrack people necessarily, but, you know, when we had dinner the other night, there's a racetrack there. Why don't we go a little early this time before we go to dinner and catch a couple of races? And as I say, it just makes a nice buzz around the whole place. I don't think it's a concept that can work everywhere because of geography and demographics. I think it's going to work very, very well at Belmont Park.
It's going to be moving forward here, I think, sooner now than later. They had to get some of these elements. There's still plenty to do, but it's coming. So is Derby and Oaks. We'll be back tomorrow. Seth, thanks. And we will talk next week after we've got fields for everything, Friday and Saturday. Want to thank Seth.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks, buddy. And we will thank Andy as well, heading back to New York, getting ready for Belmont's opening on Friday. And Jessica Martini, Sale is 90 minutes in now, day two of OBS. We'll look at the results tomorrow. Marty McGee joined us as well. It's good to get Mart in, and we started conversations with Pete Fornatale. Tomorrow, Thursday, and oh, it's Sid Fernando, of course. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, and all of our coverage here in Kentucky, brought to you by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association, as well as the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund and the Kentucky Thoroughbred Association. The Match Series. That train's going to start pulling out Preakness weekend. The Virginia Equine Alliance, all the great things, including the Virginia Residency Program, and Cole Ranch, California. Looking forward to talking to Steve Cole. Tell you more about the ranch. Get your horse there for turnout, or for your mares, or your babies getting prepared. And Steve and his staff do a great job. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, here on Sirius XM. HRRN later this afternoon, and we'll be back with you tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Thanks, everybody.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Is this the end of the Apollo curse? Undefeated Justify or Magnum Moon could become the first since 1882 to win the Derby without racing as a two-year-old. Of course, 18 others will enter the Louisville starting gate. What are their odds of extending the spell? Begin your search for enlightenment with ExpressBet's Kentucky Derby Wager Guide. It's available free online at ExpressBet.com beginning Friday, April 27th. Horse Player Now's Bob Neumeier. XBTV.com's Jeff Siegel and Millie Ball. Daily Racing Form's Dick Girardi. Santa Anita's John White. And At the Races radio host Steve Bick analyze the race according to main contenders, value plays, and $100 wagering strategies. Plus, get intriguing stats, trends, and daily updates you won't find anywhere else. NBC's Eddie Olchek joins experts in a revised guide version May 3rd. Go to ExpressBet.com and get the guide to open a new account and to choose your bonus of up to $500 in time to wager on the Derby.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.